This week, the Middle East enters a pivotal moment.
It really is a moment which is unlike anything I've seen in following the Middle East over the last 75 years.
Will the U.S. be drawn into more direct involvement?
Make no mistake, the United States is fully supportive of Israel.
And the escalating Middle East tinderbox comes just days before the one-year anniversary of the Hamas massacre in southern Israel that triggered the catastrophic war in Gaza. Join us on the Voice of America as we explore the issues in the news. Hi, everyone. I'm Lori London in Washington. Hostilities in the Middle East escalated dramatically this week. Israel continued military operations on two fronts, targeting Iran-backed Hezbollah militants in southern Lebanon and Hamas operatives in Gaza. Lebanese health officials say an Israeli airstrike Thursday on a building in the center of Lebanon's capital, Beirut, killed at least seven paramedics and rescue workers. The Israeli military lost nine soldiers in expanding ground operations. And nearly 2 weeks into Israel's major offensive against Hezbollah, a senior UN in the country said civilians are bearing the brunt of the situation.
I think what we saw from September 23rd on is truly catastrophic. It's something that, you know, the people use the word unbelievable. I mean, what are we living through? What are we looking at over here? The level of trauma, the level of fear amongst the population has been extreme.
Imran Riza, UN resident and humanitarian coordinator. The Lebanese government says around 1.2 million people have been displaced by Israeli attacks, and it appears that number could rise significantly. My colleague Steve Miller got details from reporter Ricky Rosen just outside of Tel Aviv.
The Israeli army has informed civilian residents of another, I believe, 25 villages in southern Lebanon to evacuate, to refrain from traveling south of the Litani River, and in fact to relocate north of the Litani River because they are engaging in airstrikes, intensive airstrikes, as well as what the army is calling limited ground operations to find Hezbollah command centers that are embedded within these villages, and rocket launchers carry out more assassinations of Hezbollah figures. And they're trying to minimize the civilian casualties, they say, by informing them to go north. They have even announced that they will target Nabatea, which is north of the Litani River, is within the Hezbollah realm of command.
And not only areas in southern Lebanon, Israeli forces are continuing to strike in Beirut itself.
Right, and they also struck near Damascus, and they struck a crossing between Syria and Lebanon that is considered a civilian crossing for civilian traffic. But since other crossings through which arms have been shipped and transferred from Syria, from Iran through Syria into Lebanon, and the Israeli Air Force bombed those crossings, now there is intelligence that armaments have been being transferred through this civilian crossing. And so the Israeli army is also attacking that crossing.
Thank you for that. There's one other thing I wanted to talk to you about, because on Thursday morning, D.C. time, the Israeli government released information that some 3 months ago it had killed Rahi Mashtaha, the head of the Hamas government in Gaza. For our listeners, who was Mashtaha?
Well, it was just announced now because it was just confirmed which I gather means that soldiers operating in northern Gaza, where he was killed 3 months ago, found his remains and those of the two other senior Hamas officials who were killed together with him. He was considered the most senior figure in the Hamas political wing inside Gaza. Haniyeh, who Israel assassinated in Tehran in the end of July, was the senior Hamas political figure outside of Gaza. He was a very close associate of Sinwar. They were in Israeli prison together. They were released from the Israeli prison together in a in the Gilad Shalit hostage deal. And he was active with Sinwar in going in what they called the Internal Security Service, which went after Hamas members who were suspected of collaborating with Israel. And he was considered, together with Sinwar, to be a very brutal figure, even towards his own people. And he was said to be running, since the beginning of the war, running the government activities, the more civilian government activities, if you will, throughout Gaza.
Ricky Rosen reports for VOA from outside Tel Aviv, Israel. Ricky, thank you very much for your reporting today.
Thank you.
Air raid sirens across Israel earlier in the week as Iran fired ballistic missiles into Israel in retaliation for attacks that killed the leaders of Hezbollah and Hamas, both backed by Iran in Beirut and Tehran. Israel is now promising a strong response. And as the world turns its attention to Lebanon, Palestinians fear the crisis there is diverting the world's attention from Gaza, where Israeli strikes killed dozens more people this week. We hear more from Diane Toe with Reuters.
Palestinians in Gaza are slipping out of focus. Also diminishing are the already dim prospects for a ceasefire, almost a year into a war that continues to shatter the enclave and the lives of those in it. On Thursday, local medics reported at least 99 Palestinian deaths in the past 24 hours. That includes an Israeli strike on a school compound sheltering displaced Palestinian families in central Gaza on Wednesday. The Israeli military said the strike was aimed at a Hamas command center embedded in the compound that used to be a school. Both Israel and Hamas say the Lebanon conflict could help end the Gaza war. Sami Abu Zuri, a senior Hamas official, said it could lead to pressure on Israel to strike a ceasefire deal, which would see the release of Israeli hostages held in Gaza and Palestinians jailed by Israel. But others are doubtful. Nomi Bar Yaakov, an expert on Middle East diplomacy, told Reuters Israel is now focused on trying to dismantle Hezbollah's military arsenal. That means it's had to put the ceasefire in Gaza on the back burner. U.S. State Department spokesman Matthew Miller said on Wednesday that the United States is still focused on securing a ceasefire and blamed the Palestinian group for stalling the talks.
And Hamas has refused to engage.
In August, Hamas officials and Western diplomats said new Israeli demands to keep troops in Gaza were holding up negotiations. An official briefed on the Gaza ceasefire talks told Reuters nothing would happen until after the U.S. presidential election on November the 5th. That's because no one can, quote, effectively pressure Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, whom the official called the key impediment to a Gaza ceasefire deal. The official, who requested their name and nationality be withheld, also said Hezbollah wanted the ceasefire proposal floated during last week's UN General Assembly to be linked to a ceasefire deal in Gaza. But Israel rejected this and the plan was dropped. Top Israeli officials publicly dismissed the idea of a quick ceasefire with Hezbollah. Meanwhile, at a funeral in Khan Yunis on Wednesday for some of the dozens of Gazans killed in an overnight strike, this woman called the death of a baby niece the biggest message to the world. A child sleeping in the arms of her mother, she said. What can I say? The whole world is asleep. Nobody cares about us or is even looking at our faces.
That was Diane Toe with Reuters. For months, U.S. President Joe Biden has warned Israel against allowing its war with Hamas in Gaza to spread into a wider regional conflict against Hezbollah in Lebanon and Iran itself. But despite those efforts, the moment may be here. What, if anything, can the Biden administration do, and will the U.S. be pulled into more direct involvement? We're joined by Bruce Riedel, non-resident senior fellow with the Brookings Institution's Center for Middle East Policy, who also served for 30 years with the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency.
This is a moment in time that would appear to be very pivotal for the Middle East. Israel now vowing to retaliate against Iran, Iran retaliating against Israel. How does this continue with further escalation, and does it risk getting the U.S. directly involved?
Well, after almost a year of war in Gaza, we've now seen the conflict spread to Lebanon and as far as Iran. The Iranian attack on Israel this week was larger than the attack in April. And Israel is now talking about its retaliation that's coming. And the prime minister has even called for the overthrow of the regime in Iran. It is very much a pivotal moment. The Middle East is on the verge of what may be its worst conflict since at least the 1973 war. And the damage that could be done from all this is harrowing. We've already got 2 million people in Gaza who are largely homeless. We have 1 million or so Lebanese who have fled their homes. We have tens of thousands of Israelis who fled their homes. It really is a moment which is unlike anything I've seen in following the Middle East over the last 75 years. We urgently need a ceasefire in Gaza as the starting point to de-escalate this crisis.
How do you think Israel may respond?
Israel may respond with a relatively light touch, which is what they did last April, but one that demonstrates that the Israeli Air Force can strike anywhere it wants to in Iran. They've already demonstrated by their airstrikes into Yemen against the Houthis that they can fly over 1,000 kilometers to hit targets. The tricky thing about going after Iran is you don't want to violate Jordanian airspace. That could cause a crisis with Jordan, so they'd probably have to go through Syria and Iraq. But they're capable of doing any of those things. And of course, they also have their own missiles with which they could retaliate against Iran.
Is there anything the Biden administration can do? It does not seem that Israel is willing to take U.S. considerations seriously. It seems to feel very emboldened right now.
It feels very emboldened. The Biden administration has pressed relentlessly for a ceasefire. It's not for lack of effort. They may now need to put some costs to Israel of proceeding without listening to American requests for restraint. That doesn't mean that we have to cut off arms aid to Israel. There are more subtle ways that things can be done. But I think clearly jawboning, which the president, secretary of state, director of CIA have all engaged in, is not going to do it by itself.
It doesn't seem as if they are changing strategy. We've come this far. I know that President Biden and Prime Minister Netanyahu spoke on the phone Wednesday. What do you think that conversation was like?
Well, according to some reports we've had, the two are furious with each other and that these conversations have been stormy. But you're not going to keep the prime minister from escalating the conflict if he's determined to do that by a stormy phone call. It's going to take something more costly to Israel. But it's also comes at a very difficult time for the Biden-Harris administration. I mean, we're almost a month away from the election. Anything that appears to be taking a tough posture towards Israel is going to be used by the Republicans against the vice president. In many ways, this couldn't have come at a worse time.
Do you think that Prime Minister Netanyahu is taking advantage of that fact that there is this upcoming election and he has his own political concerns?
Well, and there's the other factor. The Netanyahu government clearly favors a return of Donald Trump to the White House. They make no secret that Donald Trump was the most pro-Israeli president in modern times. They're not going to give Joe Biden and Kamala Harris a diplomatic victory if they can avoid it. That's why I think this is a time for more than just stormy conversations. It's a time for showing that there's a price to be paid for ignoring American advice.
You think that Netanyahu believes that Trump has been the most pro-Israel president in modern times?
Yeah.
Or do you think that he is the most pro?
He is certainly among the most pro-Israeli presidents we've had. And he moved the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. He violated the Iran nuclear deal, which Netanyahu opposed. He traveled to Israel early in his presidency. I think it was his second stop overseas after going to Riyadh first. And it's, I think, no secret that Netanyahu prefers Trump to the possible alternative. So we've got a rocky month or longer in front of us now. And it's very hard to assess how this is going to end in a diplomatic solution.
That's what I was going to ask you next. How does this end?
With possible major exchanges of missiles and rockets between Iran, Hezbollah, into Israel. Hezbollah in particular has the capability to fire tens of rockets and missiles into the northern Israel, including the third largest city in Israel, Haifa. It can also fire missiles into Tel Aviv. Now, of course, the Israelis can exact enormous damage to Lebanon. But, you know, at the end of the day, no one will come out of this pain-free, especially if it begins to be a war of cities with civilians being targeted and driven out of their homes.
Do you think that Iran wants war?
No, I think Iran wants a certain level of conflict, but it wants that level of conflict to be far away from full-fledged war. It knows the price of full-scale war better than most countries in the region does because it lived through the Iran-Iraq War. The Iran-Iraq War was the formative experience for most of the Iranian leadership today. And it was an extremely costly and long war, and the Iranian leadership doesn't want to go through that again. But events sometimes have a way of getting out of control, and unfortunately, that's where its situation seems to be going right now in the Middle East.
What does Benjamin Netanyahu hope to achieve? Because by all indications, from at least many analysts' perspectives, it would appear that you can take out the leaders of these terrorist groups, but they'll just replace them. You can't eliminate them because it's an ideology, correct?
That's right, absolutely. You can take out the leaders. They're always replaceable. You know, Israel has done a lot against the Iranian nuclear program in the last 5 years, killing scientists, stealing documents. The bottom line is Iran is closer to a nuclear bomb today than it has ever been before. It could produce enough fissile material to make 5 bombs in 1 week. Now, we don't know how far along their weapons development program is, but it's probably further along than we have hard information on. And the more Israel demonstrates that Iran's conventional military deterrent is ineffective, as it has now on 2 occasions, the more it's going to raise the prospects of Iran going nuclear to develop its own nuclear deterrent. So we could end up coming out of this crisis with Iran taking the fateful step of actually building a bomb or multiple bombs. We don't know exactly how much, but the president has said we were involved in Israel this week. We also have 40,000 or so American troops in the Middle East, stationed in Kuwait, Qatar, Jordan, smaller numbers in Iraq and Syria. All of those troops are likely targets for Hezbollah and other groups. We could find ourselves with American forces under attack. So, you know, I reiterate, now is the time to push for that ceasefire in Gaza with everything you have so the situation can at least start to de-escalate. It's not going to be easy to do, no question about it. The trend lines in the region are going in the opposite direction.
We're heading into the one-year mark, just days away now. Gaza's in shambles. There's a dire humanitarian crisis, and we still have hostages that are alive or not being held by Hamas. Is all of this just basically pushing that aside?
Gaza will not go away. And we just saw Hamas carry out a terrorist attack in Tel Aviv. So the problem for Israel is it faces conflict on multiple fronts. Gaza, Lebanon, in the Red Sea. The West Bank is getting more and more volatile. And all of this has significantly hurt the Israeli economy. Every time they have to call up a reserve unit, that means people don't go to work anymore. So this is a costly venture, not just in lives, but also in economic terms for Israel. And of course, the economy of Lebanon has been dead for years. Syria is a failed state. We have a Middle East that is not in a healthy state by any means at all.
And families of hostages wonder if they'll ever see their loved ones again.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be a tough day, October 7th.
Bruce Riedel, non-resident senior fellow with the Brookings Institution's Center for Middle East Policy, thank you so much for being with us. You're listening to Issues in the News. I'm Lori London. A year on, a conflict sparked by a stunning terror attack on Israel that killed 1,200 people and led to a raging conflict that has killed more than 40,000 in Gaza and now threatens to engulf the entire Mideast. The warring parties have rebuffed numerous deals and blown through pauses and past ceasefires, so the bloodletting is likely to carry on to the next U.S. president. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell brings us this report from Washington.
There is nothing to celebrate as this conflict nears its one-year anniversary. Violence in the Mideast has grown considerably in that time. Beyond Israel, where it started October 7th, when Hamas militants launched their surprise attack and snatched over 250 hostages, into Gaza, which for months has endured Israeli bombardments and ground operations, and then into Lebanon, where Israel recently struck at the Hezbollah militant group with airstrikes that killed its leader, provoking this fiery response from the militant group's main backer, Iran. U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan sought to soothe nerves this week after the latest Iranian attack.
Obviously, this is a significant escalation by Iran, a significant event, and it is equally significant that we were able to step up with Israel and create a situation in which no one was killed in this attack in Israel, so far as we know at this time.
Analysts say it's not clear how this ends. Gerald Feierstein is director of the Arabian Peninsula Program and distinguished senior fellow for diplomacy at the Middle East Institute.
There's no clear indication that either the Israelis or Hamas is looking for an end. They both seem to be able and willing to carry this on for quite some time to come.
Diplomatic pressure is intensifying as more than 140 countries recognize Palestine as a state, including Ireland, Norway, and Spain, which did so this year. As this conflict twists and turns, analysts point to reasons the clashes continue. One factor, Israel's effort to wipe out Hamas and Hezbollah is not unwelcome among some Arab leaders. Stephen Cook is a senior fellow for Middle East and Africa Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations.
It's hard for me to believe that the Saudis, the Emiratis, the Bahrainis, and others don't believe that a region without Hezbollah, without Hamas, or a much diminished Hamas, a much diminished Hezbollah, is a better region.
At the same time, analysts say the Hamas attack emboldened other Islamist groups like Somalia's al-Shabaab or offshoots of Islamic State groups and al-Qaeda. Farah Pandit is an adjunct senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations.
What has happened as we look at the trajectory of events that have happened since the brutal and horrific attacks of October 7th is that each one of these groups have utilized the ecosystem for their purposes.
What doesn't appear to have changed is President Joe Biden's stance on Israel. The U.S. is Israel's largest backer, both militarily and diplomatically. Under Biden's command, U.S. forces played key roles in helping Israel repel two Iranian ballistic missile strikes. Here he is, days after October 7th.
We must be crystal clear. We stand with Israel.
And this week.
Make no mistake, the United States is fully, fully, fully supportive of Israel.
As this grim anniversary looms, two things are crystal clear. This conflict won't end soon. Biden's term will. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
And that's all the time we have this week. On behalf of all of us here at VOA, thank you so much for listening. For more news throughout the week, listen to International Edition, Monday through Friday, or visit us anytime at voanews.com. Join us next week for more Issues in the News. Until then, I'm Lori London.